Just would like to mention when you're dealing with the mics and so on, as you probably are aware, this committee, it's probably due to its timing, but also especially a bit later due to some of the activities that we'll be going through here, is frequently televised, and I think each and every time we've met, we've been televised, and that's true again today. We don't quite have a quorum present, so we're going to go down to the presentation of the state fee report from the Mr. Charlie Bielek, Director of Budget Planning Operations, will begin. And sorry I mispronounced your name, but welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Charlie Bielek. I'm the Director of Budget Planning Operations for the Minnesota Department of Finance. And I speak to you a little bit this morning about two reports that have been produced on fees. You should have three handouts in your package. The first one is a series of summary slides entitled State Agency Fees. The second one is a complete copy of the state fee report that was done by the Minnesota Department of Revenue in conjunction with the Department of Finance. And finally, there's a third brief handout entitled Departmental Earnings Report. The two reports that I'm going to talk to you about this morning are very much overlapping and very much related. And begin with the report on state agency fees. In Laws 2005, the 2005 Omnibus Tax Bill, this was a required report. Actually, three reports were required. Thank you. Three reports were required. One, by the Department of Revenue in conjunction with the Department of Finance on state agency fees. There were two other reports, one on school fees and one on city fees. School fees produced by the Department of Education and the report on city fees by the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Those two reports are on the respective websites, the Department of Education and Department of Revenue, as is the copy of the report I'm going to speak to today, State Agency Fees, which is on the Department of Revenue's website. Let me just take the opportunity to say that this report is somewhat unique in that in all my years we haven't done as comprehensive an overview of state fees, so I think this first report will at least offer you some insight and context for your budget deliberations, particularly as they relate to state agency fees. Fees in Minnesota in fiscal year 2005, and which is page 2 of the handout, or as shown on the screen, in fiscal year 2005, fees accounted for $903 million, about 3.7% of total state revenues, of all state revenues. Correspondingly, the period covered by this report is fiscal year 2001 to 2005. And so the last actual year in this report is 2005. This is, of course, precedes the health impact fee, which began in fiscal year 2006. Correspondingly, if you consider where we are today, that is fiscal year 2007, state fees are estimated to raise $1.18 billion and be about 4.3% of total state revenues. Commonly, when we talk about revenues, we also, in price of government information, other information that you have.
Excuse me for just a quick moment. We do have a quorum present, but do continue.
Commonly, when we talk about state revenues, we also talk about own source revenues. That is excluding federal. On that basis, state fees account for 5% of state revenues in fiscal year 2005. That grows to 5.6% in fiscal year 2007. Regarding state fees, let me just make a couple of key points to you. Again, these are in your brief handout and more information in the actual report, but there are about 1,900 separate fees administered by 65 individual state agencies and boards. The vast majority of the fees must be changed with legislative approval, and only a very, very small percentage are set by rulemaking or other processes. For example, some fees set before July 2001, charges between state agencies are generally set and reviewed by the Department of Finance and not the state legislature. Minuscule fees, of course, are set independently, and use of state-owned lands are set differently also. Fee levels and cost recovery are really analyzed biannually and are part of that second report that I'm going to brief you on today, the Departmental Earnings Report. Again, there are several important things to recognize about state fees. One, they are generally grouped by categories. Kind of the main categories of state fees are licenses, that is, occupational, business, recreational, and there are some samples in your handout there. For example, master plumber's licenses or insurance company licenses. There are departmental services. These are commonly called the user fees. These are fees charged by state agencies for various services, campground fees, state law library fees, and grain inspection are examples of that type of fees. And finally, in the broad picture of state fees, are penalties and fines. These include seatbelt fines, controlled substance fines, forfeited property. So these are basically the key pieces and types of fees that are reported at the broad state level as collected by state agencies. Generally, fees are grouped for analysis by other categories. For example, there are several other additional categories. Care and hospitalization. State-operated services and human services is an example. The collections there for care and treatment. Third-party collections and payments in the veterans' homes fall under department care and hospitalization. Finally, there are two other categories, departmental sales. Examples there are sale of timber, sale of gravel, sand and salt, that recover some fees from various purchasers. These are products sold by state agencies. And finally, there's the last category, other revenue. These are things like surcharges, the speeding ticket surcharge, the parking surcharge, birth and death certificate, copy surcharges. So these are generally the nature of all fees collected by state agencies. And what the overhead shows you currently is that about two categories account for three-quarters of all state fees collected. Licensing is by far the largest category, collecting in excess of $500 million in fiscal year 05, followed by departmental services. That is the example there again is a campground fee and other type of fee charges at about $260 million. From there, the numbers decline fairly rapidly to about $50 million a year for current hospital penalties and fines and other surcharges, and finally, departmental sales is probably the smallest category there. One of the charges in the statute that required this report was to look at fees over a specific period. The actual statute suggested that we look at fiscal year 2002 to 2005. When we were working with the Department of Revenue on initial draft of this report, we quickly recognized that since fees are set generally by the major sessions of the legislature in conjunction with the biennial budget, that it was a bit misleading to actually begin with fiscal year 2002, the second year of the biennium. So the report horizon was expanded backward to include fiscal year 2001 through 2005. What the chart in your handout and now on the overhead shows you is generally it compares the growth in state fee collections, the growth in state taxes. And over that period, fiscal year 2001-2005, fee revenues actually grew slightly faster than state taxes grew. If you look at the table there, which highlights income, sales, and other taxes, total taxes grew over that period, fiscal year 2001-2005, by about 25%, or at an average rate of about 5.7% annually. Conversely, fees over that same time period grew at a faster rate, about 26.1%, or about 6% annually. This period, the 2003 legislative session, did make significant increases in state fees, which I'll also highlight for you. So in comparison, over the period 2001-2005, it is accurate to say that fees grew faster than state taxes. Again, I would remind you that this is prior to the introduction of the health impact fee in fiscal year 2006. What accounted for that fee growth?
I think we need, if someone can help, suggestion was made by one of the committee members, we need to focus that a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
I just thought it was my trifocals at first, but it was not. I think that improves it. It could be a little sharper, though, I think. There, it's getting better. I think that's readable now. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I also point out this is on page 5 of that first handout. I apologize for my inexperience with this.
I'm not sure where, as I mentioned, being televised, I'm not sure when that's not clear how the cameras pick that up. But at any rate, if they're using that, then it's clear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's interesting to note in the chart that is up there now and is on page 5, bottom of page 5 of the handout, what accounted for the growth during that period, fiscal year 1 through fiscal year 05. And actually, fines and surcharges, that is, court-related fines and surcharges, were the fastest-growing area. Licensing and grew about 7.5%. Departmental services and sales grew 5.3%. But over that same period, penalties and fines grew 14.7%. Actually, during the same period, care and hospital earnings declined 10.3%. And part of that was a decline in populations in the state-operated services, in the RTCs, that occurred during that period. But I think it's important for members to appreciate that fees generally fall into two categories. More than half of the fee revenues in fiscal year 2005 were deposited to dedicated funds. There's a special revenue fund, to the Trunk Highway Fund, to the Game and Fish Fund, to sources that basically did not contribute to the general fund in any way, shape, or form in terms of budget balancing. In most cases, the fees deposited in dedicated funds are truly dedicated for that purpose, for the purposes of recovering costs in the areas or activities that they fund. About 52% of fees were deposited into the general fund. In the case of the general fund, fee revenues are non-dedicated, are treated as non-dedicated receipts, and are not directly tied to necessarily the spending in those programs. Probably interesting also to note that five agencies collect about 70% of state fee revenues. Department of Natural Resources, the court system, Commerce and Public Safety and Human Services really raised in fiscal year 2005 slightly over $150 million of the total $903 million in revenues. So they account basically for about about 70%, 69% of total state revenues collected. So when we talk about where is the majority, and this is on dollar volume. This is not number of fees. This is actually dollars collected for fiscal year 2005. Finally, the last, I think, interesting look at state fees is which committees or which basic spending areas have jurisdiction over the majority of state fees in terms of dollar volume. The pie chart that is on the overhead now and is also in your packet on page, the top of page 7, highlights which areas, which legislative areas, really have responsibility for the majority of fee administration. This doesn't exactly correspond to the current House committee structure, but rather reflects kind of the omnibus bill structure from the 2005 legislative session. As you can see from the table there, there are three areas, public safety and courts, the environment and natural resources, and general government, that account, again, for over 75% of the revenues generated by state fees. Smaller areas that have a number of significant fees are health and human services, transportation, education, and economic development. But in terms of the volume of state fees, clearly the three major areas account for the majority of the revenues that were received in fiscal year 2008. Finally, the last thing that the report highlights for you is that in the 2003 session, the last two sections of the summary handout address the fee increases that occurred both in the 2003 session, which of course are reflected in this report, and a handout on the fee increases enacted in the 2005 legislative session, which were beyond the horizon of this report. In 2003, the 2003 session enacted about $206 million in fee changes for fiscal year, that affected fiscal year 2004 and 2005. And what the handout indicates is what some of those major items were. The full report, again, which you have in your hands, also provides a much more comprehensive and detailed listing. But in 2003, the major changes that were enacted included court surcharges and increases in court fee increases of $92 million, nearly half of the $206 million that was enacted in 2004 and 2005. Generally, the court fees, the surcharges there, generally were part of the non-dedicated revenues that were used in putting together the biannual budget for 2004 and 2005. Other major increases included were public safety, $16 million, natural resources, $9 million, and the health department, $8 million. There were various other small increases that of course, were enacted during that session, but again, are detailed in the long version of the session summary included in the Department of Revenue report. Finally, in fiscal year 2005, I just think it's interesting again to note the relative size of the fee increases that were approved in fiscal year 2005. A total of $589 million was enacted in fiscal year 2005 for fee changes. Again, beyond the window of the report, but part of our current numbers for fiscal year 2006 and 2007. Certainly, the largest item, the largest portion of that enacted in fiscal in the 2005 session was the health impact fee. The health impact fee at that time was expected to bring, you know, slightly over $430 million in fiscal years 2006 and 2007. Again, I'm sure many of you recall some of the other increases that were enacted during that session. Public safety fees were increased $71 million, and that included a 911 fee increase, Motor vehicle title and transfer fees increased, and there was an increase in, there was a spending, speeding surcharge enacted during that time. Again, there was also some major fee increases in the courts. Criminal and traffic fine surcharges were increased, court fees were increased, and real estate recording fees were increased. Again, the point here is just to present you with some context and perspective of what has been the growth in fees over that period and what some of the major contributors to that growth were. I would also note to you, Mr. Chairman, that this information has been unusual. It really is the first overview we've done, taking sort of a comprehensive look at these. I think staff and committee members would be challenged to find similar information for other states. Generally, that information is not broadly available. If you Google today, state fees, and exclude the word Minnesota, this report will come up in one of the top five, and you'd be hard pressed to find other relevant information corresponding information for other states. So I think this is a useful overview that I think presents some context for both the change in fees and their relationship to the total budget. If I could then move on to the second report, which is the departmental earnings report, and direct your attention to the second handout in your package entitled Departmental Earnings Report. As I pointed out initially, the two reports are related, but they are quite different in the nature of information that they contain. The first report that we worked on with the Department of Revenue was designed to be a broad overview of the nature and growth in state fees. The second report, the Departmental Earnings Report, serves a very, very different purpose. And I'd like to highlight for you and give you some examples of what's in that report. It is a biannual report. I have a copy here. There's not a copy in your folders. It's a 600-page report. It is currently on the Department of Finance's website. The Departmental Earnings Report, the focus of the Departmental Earnings Report is very different. While it is basically dealing with the same information that I presented to you in the overview report, the focus of the Departmental Earnings Report is to analyze whether or not state fees are recovering costs of the activities that they support. And in that respect, it's a very detailed report. The audience of this report is primarily legislative staff and perhaps individual legislators. I don't expect that most of you will ever look at the Departmental Earnings Report, because the level of information in it is quite detailed and is quite analytical. But what I'd like to do is just give you an overview of the report and a couple of examples to familiarize yourself with the information contained within. One of my colleagues reminded me today of a quote from former Commissioner of Finance Peg Ingeson. And Peggy was often known to say that putting together or balancing the biennial budget without the Departmental Earnings Report is like going duck hunting without an accordion. Well, I didn't quite understand it then when she said it, and now what I'm trying to do is give you a little perspective of the uses of this report, because it isn't always evident how this information can be used. The Departmental Earnings Report is required by statute. 16A.1285 defines the requirements. It is produced biannually, normally in conjunction with the governor's biannual budget. The report went up on the web at the end of January and really kind of complements some of the information in the governor's budget. It is a comprehensive inventory of state agency fees. As opposed to the broad categories that I showed you earlier for categorizing fees, this report does include an inventory for all state agencies of all state agency fees. it groups the fees by the categories that I spoke about earlier, regulatory, licensure, other similar charges levied by state agencies. It goes beyond this in identifying the types of charges, explaining the purposes of those charges, and the amounts collected specifically by year for those fees. And finally, it identifies whether or not fees are recovering the cost of activities for which they are collected. Now, the Department of Earnings Report begins with information from the state accounting system. Basically, the historical information, the current information, is a starting point for preparation of the Departmental Earnings Report. Various revenues are grouped in the statewide accounting system by revenue source code. And so basically each license and type of revenue has a source code in the accounting system where we're able to pull out that information. However, the analysis does not occur in the state accounting system. It occurs in the state's biennial budget system. So information from the accounting system is matched, historical information and current information on revenues collected is matched, and forecast information for the biennial budget request years is included in the biennial budget system. This is a report that is prepared by agencies. They basically update every 2 years the explanatory information on state fees that is contained with the report. They enter forecasts or forecast revenue for fiscal year 2008 and 2009 in the budget system, and they prepare this information and is then reviewed by the Department of Finance. Part of the information for activities that may not be recovering all of their costs is part of the decision making in the governor's budget in terms of whether or not the governor should recommend that a fee be increased, decreased, or left unchanged. The fee report, therefore, does include a period of 5 fiscal years. It includes fiscal year 2005 actuals, 2006 actuals, budget amounts for 2007. It also displays current law forecasts for 2008 and 2009, as well as governor's budget recommendations for fees for 2008 and 2009. It complements the biennial budget documents in that wherever a fee change is recommended by the governor, there is a corresponding change item page in the governor's biennial budget documents. Finally, what I'd like to do for you is just then highlight just a couple of pieces of information in the Department of Learning's report so you can at least be familiar with the types and nature of information and its potential uses. Not included in your handout, but I'll show you just briefly on the screen. I don't expect you to focus on any numbers or necessarily even be able to read any numbers, but at the very highest level, what the fee report does is show you a summary, again, of all the revenues collected. On the top half of the page, it indicates what revenues are being deposited as non-dedicated receipts, and what revenue at the bottom of the page, what revenues are and fees are being deposited as dedicated receipts. In the example before you for fiscal year 2007, the current year, fees will non-dedicated fees will raise about nearly $740 million, and dedicated fees will raise an additional nearly half a billion dollars, $500 million. So for fiscal year 2007, the current fiscal year, about $1.1 billion is being raised in state agency fees. And I think
that's a great quick question. That list that you just put up there, is that only then state agencies, as the other report was? For example, a U of M tuition and fees or Minsky tuition and fees would not be on the
Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely correct. Minsky and the University of Minnesota fees are not included in this report.
Yeah, I knew in the earlier report, when you were talking about total revenue with that one that was not in our packet, so I was curious if that included any of there, but it does not as well. Okay.
The chairman members, that is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
If I could, then, what I'd like to do quickly then is just to show you a couple of examples of the information that are contained in the report. In your handout, there is attachment one, It's entitled the Agriculture Department Dairy Services Account. And again, this is representative of the information that is contained in the report. The report is presented by state agencies, so if you actually were going to the web to look at this report, or if you're not an individual agency, you would find each agency listed alphabetically in the report. The beginning of each agency has, just like I showed you the summary of four revenues before, each agency begins with a summary, again, of the revenues collected, both non-dedicated, dedicated, and totals by fund. So you can get a quick snapshot of the individual fees, even if you don't move past anything else in the report for a given agency or department, those fee revenues that are collected by those agencies. But the report does one thing that goes beyond that. Again, until now, all we've been talking about is fee revenues collected. The primary purpose of this report is indicated in Attachment 1, again, which is the dairy services account in the Agriculture Department. What the report presents for you then is not only a description of the revenues collected, statement of purpose, the statutory authority, and the fund to which they're deposited, but the key fiscal information in the report shows you for the five applicable fiscal years, the revenues collected matched against the expenditures for that activity, or for the activity that they're collecting. In this case here, expenditures include both direct expenditures, that is, those that are directly paid from those accounts, as well as indirect expenditures. The example of indirect expenditures would be management costs, rent, leases, that are generally billed at a different level in the agency. It could also include, for example, for those activities that have vehicles involved or equipment involved, depreciation costs. So the intent here is to reflect the true cost of the activity supported by the fees. This is one reason that this is done in the biennial budget system, because the match between the fee revenue and the program cost or the activity cost that supports is not always readily available from the state accounting system. So this piece of analysis, that is matching the fees with the costs, is completed by state agencies and reviewed by finance. Finally, at the bottom of the report, what it highlights for you then is by year, the difference from revenues raised for the year, historically and projected, and expenditures, both historical and projected for that. Again, the nature here is to identify which activities and which fees are over or under recovering their costs. I would also point out to you, not included in the report, there is a level of information that is below this. For example, in the database, the inventory of state fees for this particular activity, there really are about a half a dozen specific fees related to this activity. And they have to do with milk inspection or dairy plant inspection or farm milk pickup permits. So each of these fees is identified separately in the underlying information, is available to legislative staff. And what it gives you is, when was the fee first enacted? 1947. When was it last changed? Maybe 2003. And the number of payers that for each of the fees. So there's a wealth of information. It's very detailed, but it is the only comprehensive inventory of state fees, really, for Minnesota state government. So there's another level of detail here, really below the information, that that can be used for analytical purposes, can be used for decision making. Again, it's rather specific to committees and individual agencies what the emphasis is. Finally, the other two examples that are attached here, this is a good example of a agency fee that approximately recovers the cost of the services it provides. The second example is the Commerce Department in insurance company regulation and licensing. Again, the difference between these two fees is the Commerce Department, the agriculture fees are basically dedicated fees in the agriculture fund. The example here for the Commerce Department is a fee which generates non-dedicated general fund revenue. that is deposited to the general fund and available for general purposes. A quick review of the financial snapshot for the insurance company fees, again, shows you that over the years, fiscal year 5 through fiscal year 2009, fees collected by this activity exceed the cost of the program that it supports. Again, as a matter of policy, this has been the direction by decision makers and legislature that in this case here, this and some of the other fees in Department of Commerce are allowed to over-recover the cost of the programs that they support. This money becomes non-dedicated resources to the general fund and the budget overall. Finally, the last example. And there are hundreds of pages of these in the report. The last example is attachment 3, which is from the Public Safety Department, and that's the 911 user fee. That's the surcharge on that appears on phone bills. The reason that and I think it's useful to show you this information is, again, this is a dedicated fee. It goes to the state government special revenue fund. It's been recently modified in 2005 session. It was increased. Also, this is an area where there is a recommended change. In this case here, in the governor's budget, the governor is recommending increasing the 911 surcharge. So, correspondingly, in the governor's budget documents, you will find not only find this financial analysis of what's been the history of this fee over the recent years, how much is it collected related to the expenses. You will find in the governor's budget a change item that really addresses increasing this fee for fiscal year 2008 and 2009 and beyond. As you look at the expenditures in this fee, a major portion of them appear as earnings transferred out, and again, just by way of explanation, not all fees that are collected by particular agencies are necessarily spent within those agencies. In the case of the transfers out here shown for 911, the monies here are going to support debt service on the revenue bonds associated with the 911 fees. That is both for 911 and the OMERS system, the emergency matrix radio system that is supported by the 911 fees. So, Mr. Chairman, I think, again, the usefulness of these reports will vary from committee to committee. Again, if you consider where the majority of fees by finance division are and the nature of them, this information is available to you for analysis as you consider some of your budget decisions, and I think legislative staff is probably your best source for detailed questions on fees in any given area or agency.
Okay, thank you. And I wanted to mainly make the committee aware that the reports were done and to give you an idea of what it contained. We'll have time we've got about five bills up for just a question or two, and I noticed that Mr. Severson had indicated he had a question, and maybe we can take one other after yours and then move on to the bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some clarification on attachment one on the agriculture. I just wanted to get some clarification. It says accumulated balance brought forward. When the fees collected exceed the amount of revenue expended, it rolls forward. Does it stay within that same category?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the accumulated balance forward, I actually make two important points. First of all, the accumulated balance forward does not necessarily represent an actual dollar balance in an account. What it is it's a trend analysis over the five-year period. So the accumulated, what is shown as the accumulated difference there, or the accumulated balance, just reflects the trend. It doesn't necessarily reflect an account balance.
Okay.
The second part of the question is, for dedicated accounts, generally, that over-recover, yes, those balances stay within the account. For non-dedicated revenues, of course, they don't.
And just one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the 911 emergency support system, is that the 800 megahertz build-out? Is that the debt service on that? Can you tell me that?
Yes, it is. Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative Solberg, for the final question.
Mine is also related to the 911. In 06 and 07, there's a $8 million each biennium. Then it goes to zero. Does that mean that the bonds are paid off? And if they're not, how are those bonds being paid off?
Mr. Chairman, I'm maybe not as familiar as I should be with the details of this activity. I know that the revenue bonds are continuing. We're having a bond. I think we either had or are having a bond sale for 911 bonds. As you look forward, the debt service costs are not showing here. They're budgeted but not showing. So these are bonds that are currently out there. Debt service is currently being paid and will continue to be paid.
Mr. Chair, that's something that probably the Capital Investments Committee will have to ask. The reason I ask that is if you change it, transferring it originally from this to the general fund, and I don't, that doesn't indicate there's either two things here. Someone else is going to pay the bond off, the general fund possibly, or the bonds have been paid off. So we'll get to a more detailed answer on this.
Okay. Thank you very much. And as was mentioned, the best source of additional information, you said, would be our fiscal analysts. And I noticed Mr. Marks has the big book. What did you say, 600 and some pages? So thank you. Well, now, some time ago, I announced that we did have a quorum present. So if Representative Houseman, I noticed, has been looking over the materials very carefully, would move the minutes. Representative Houseman moves approval of the minutes for Monday, March 5th, 2007. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Pawlowski, you have the first bill up this morning, and Representative Thon, we'll need to have you move the
report. Okay, I move adoption of the State Government Finance Division report for House File 1048, the First Committee in Congressman.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Pawlowski, you want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 1048, the First Committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and if you could explain the bill.
Mr. Chair, this is the abolishment of the Department of Employee Relations. The functions would be moved, with two exceptions, to the Department of Finance by June 2008. The two exceptions are that the administration of state employee workers' compensation would go to the Commissioner of Administration, and the health care purchasing improvements are transferred to the Commissioner of Health. The bill is before you, and the overview, Mr. Chair, I want to just add that Commissioner Anderson, and you, most of you have heard this before, but met with me about 6 weeks ago, and we tentatively planned that this bill would probably take the better part of this year, and we'd have it up next session. This work was done all within 4 weeks, which I think is a great compliment to her and her work, and that the legislature and the governor can work speedily at some tasks, and this is one of them.
Okay, is there any discussion on the motion? Representative
Rupin. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I'm just curious as to why you're, you know, transferring the workers' compensation portion of this to admin instead of maybe to Department of Labor and Industry that does workers' compensation. That's what they basically do for a living.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccadina, the transfers that you see in the bill are the result of the negotiations with the Commissioner and those departments. Those were the best locations based on what the particular agency did. The Commissioner is here if you want her to address how those negotiations went. But
well,
that's my understanding.
It would be nice to find out, Mr. Chair and members, because
you know.
Mr. Chair, I'd let the Commissioner Anderson respond.
Ms. Anderson. Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina. The reason that workers' comp is going to admin rather than Dolly is because MAPE insisted on that, and the employees also that it was their choice. And it was a admin has a current insurance division. They do all the other insurance for the state of Minnesota. This will fit right under that. It's again a different type of insurance for the state of Minnesota, but that is the reason, and it was a negotiated thing, and I think it's a very good decision in the end.
Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner Whiting, you put your the health insurance in the Department of Administration. And since when did you start listening to MAPE? Two questions.
Do you want me to answer the second
one? Yeah. First, you can answer the second one first. Mr. Anderson.
Representative Rucavina, the health insurance is directly related to bargaining, to HR, to payroll, and so on, and that's a very different thing than essentially a self-insured workers' comp fund, which is, acts more like a insurance division rather than an employee benefit.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think the Department of Labor and Industry has done a very good job with workers' comp. At least my experience here at the Capitol with some of our staff that have been injured over the years, so maybe should be in Dolly where at least they have some expertise. But I think the whole bill is a bad idea, Mr. Chair, so that's one concern I have with it.
Okay. You'll have an opportunity to express your concern in a minute or two, I think. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none, then, all in favor of the motion by Representative Pawlowski that House File 1048, the first committee engrossment be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. We now have House File 777 by Representative Lesch. Housing Opportunity Tax Abatement Program established, and is Representative Clark here? Oh, they're at the end. Okay. Representative Clark, would you move the division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 777 be recommended to pass.
Well, actually, the motion, Representative Clark, should be to move adoption of the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Division Report for House File 777. Set motion to hear.
That's exactly what I moved.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Clark, now the motion that.
Okay, then I move that House File 777 be recommended.
And re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, as I understand it. So Representative Lesch, motion is before us. Would you care to explain the bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Members, what this does is tell you, first of all, briefly where this idea came from. And it started when a constituent of mine on the east side of St. Paul showed me a graph of the number of Section 8 vouchers in 55106, which is the zip code on the east side of St. Paul. And it showed me all the other zip codes in St. Paul. And 55106 had twice as many Section 8 vouchers as any other zip code in the city of St. Paul. And I was interested because you have people who come in from out of town and they look at some of our housing options for low-income folks in the Twin Cities, and they drive by, say, a government-sponsored housing project like McDonough Homes or some of these other places, Roosevelt Homes, and they look and they say, well, those are really nice apartments. Are those, you know, retirement homes or whatever? And they say, no, that's actually a public housing project. And their eyebrows raise and they say, wow, it's really well-maintained. Everything looks nice. Then you go on certain of these blocks in 55106 on the east side of St. Paul, and you discover when you look at the property tax records that they're being bought up by absentee landlords who live either out of state or very far out of town. And I thought, well, what seems to be the problem here, why it's concentrating here? And I was told by many of these landlords is because of the property tax situation. they said if you were able to, if I was able to abate some of my properties in some of these other areas, it would give me better opportunity to provide housing opportunities. So what I did is I came up with House File 777 a few years ago, and it says this. If you, essentially, if you live in a city or you have a city with a very high tax base, in a county with over 200,000 residents, number two, if you're in a census tract in that city where less than 10% of the residents live below the poverty level, number three, if you have a contract with a housing authority to provide for a Section 8 voucher, then you can apply to have that portion of your property taxes abated, and therefore make it more possible for you to offer affordable housing in those areas that essentially don't have any right now. I have, however, had conversations recently with representatives of the counties who stated the counties may have a problem with this and we may choose to restructure it, essentially have the same result but have it be different from direct abatement so that the local taxing authority would not lose out on the revenue. So I'm not sure if that explains it adequately, but I'm open for questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there questions to Representative Lett? Hearing none, then the motion is before us that the bill be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion no. Carried. Thank you, Mr. Lesh, Representative Lesh. And now we'll go to House File 1208 by Representative Mahoney. And that's the large bill that, has that one been distributed? It has been distributed, and this one is a...
It's my attempt to help the paper mill
bill
industry.
That, I think this is simply going to be a re-referral, and...
that is correct, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move this bill.
Okay, Representative Mahoney, move.
I'd like to move House File 1208.
Representative Mahoney, we need to first adopt the division report, being it was in division, and we'll need a motion by... Representative Clark has left.
Can I make a motion
division?
As a member of the committee?
Are you on that division?
No, I'm not, actually. I'm not on that
okay.
division.
Okay, someone on the Clark division to make the motion. That's the housing. Representative Solberg makes the motion that we adopt the Housing and Policy Finance and Public Health Finance Division report for House File 1208, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mahoney, now the motion to recommend House File 1208.
As the first, I move House File 1208, first committee engrossment, move with no recommendation be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
And that motion is before us. Now, this is simply a referral, maybe just a quick explanation of why we need to re-refer it, and the bill may come back to us if it contains fiscal costs after it's been re-referred.
You're correct, Mr. Chair. It will come back here because it does have some fiscal implications. It's a policy bill moving through all of its committees. It started out in a... Housing Policy and Finance and was referred back here. It really just has to go to Commerce and then the State Gov and then back here to be re-referred to State Government Finance and then Higher Ed.
Okay, now this is one of those that, again, is a procedural motion. We can take a couple of very quick questions. We've got a number of bills and a couple of them are a little more complicated. So, okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. This was not the one that we had in higher ed that you amended with the workers' compensation.
No. No. That, I think, is later this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Any further discussion on the procedural motion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We now have House File 906 by Representative Thiessen. Dealing with birth defects, information, system funding provided, and money appropriated. Representative Solberg being the chair ex-official on Representative Clark's committee.
I would move the committee report.
Okay, Representative Solberg moves adoption of the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division Report for House File 906, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Thiessen.
I'd move that 906. First committee engrossment be moved with no recommendation and be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety, although I may be amending that motion after we take some action, but to get the motion before us.
Okay, so moved, and if you want to explain the bill, and I understand you may have a change in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make an author's amendment to delete Section 2.
Okay. Representative Thiessen moves that Section 2, did you say?
Yes.
Be deleted. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, then all those.
Yes.
Representative Kahn.
Why?
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn. Because the language, it's intended to collect some information. In the form it's currently written, it won't provide the information would be collected, but it wouldn't be useful information. And so we're going to, it may be that we go back and work on that language, but as it's currently structured, first of all, the language is drafted won't collect useful information in a way that the department will be able to use it to get at the questions that are trying to be answered. And the second thing is, what we're trying to do with this bill initially is to get this birth registry kind of up and running. We want to take the first step before we take the second step.
Mr. Chairman, I actually talked with some people who are doing something similar to this in Iowa, and one of the things that would be incredibly useful is to tie it to our GIS system. Now, it's not perfect because obviously the a birth defect can come from lots of things other than just where the person lives. But they were getting some very interesting information in Iowa, and what particularly impressed me at the time when I talked to them is that our land management information system was much, much better than theirs, and we could get much more valuable information than that. So how does that, you know, is there any chance for doing that with this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, we are on the deletion of Section 2, and I think you may want to, she may be more appropriate to address those questions than me.
Let's take care of the motion that's before us first, if that's all right, with committee members. Representative Houseman.
But, Mr. Chair, it wasn't Representative Kahn's question to the motion to delete Section 2. So that's the issue that we're questioning at this point.
You were deferring to Representative Clark. Then
this is actually Representative Clark's language in Section 2, so I think it may be more...
The chair was reading the bill as we were talking here, so okay. Representative Clark.
Oh, Mr. Chair, it's hard for me to disagree with... Representative Kahn, I totally agree with you. There's a lot of information about geographical where people have lived that are very, very important. That's why that amendment is on there. I think we're trying to move this bill forward right now, and in interest of doing that, let this language come out of this bill and be considered in another bill. And I think that's basically what the point is here, not that the substance of it is anything wrong with the substance of it at all. And I think that's a probably way to talk about it.
I think that's totally Mr. Chair, I think that is appropriate. And there are other bills that get at the issue in Section 2 that we can maybe focus on.
Representative Kahn, does that take care of your concern? Okay, the motion then to delete the Section 2 is before us. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Okay. Representative Thiessen, on the balance of the bill then. Any further comments?
Representative Houseman, actually, Mr. Chair, raised another question on lines 1.4 and 1.5. I think we may need to just delete the language. is that for the title as well? Or is that, well, we can take care of that perhaps at a later time. Okay. So I would like to, I'd like to amend my motion then, Mr. Chair. The reason this is going to go to the government operations, or not government operations, to the public safety committee was because Section 2 created some new consent language and data privacy issues. With the deletion of Section 2, nothing is changing with regard to data privacy under current law, so I think we can just re-refer it back to Representative Clark's committee.
So that will be your...
So I would amend my motion that House Bill 906, First Committee Engrossment, move with no recommendation be re-referred to the Committee on Public Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Okay, Representative Tolbert. Let's see, has my amendment been distributed? Here it is. Okay.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I would recommend that House File 958 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Madam Chair, to accept that motion, I do have a couple of other amendments I think that are available.
Representative Solver, so move.
Madam Chair, then I would move that House File 958 be amended with amendment entitled H0958A4.
Is there any discussion for this amendment?
Madam Chair, let me explain the amendment. This is a requirement again, or a request from the Governor's Office, Department of Finance, that this appropriation be made in, this is the deficiency bill, by the way. I should explain that first of all. The deficiency bill is a bill that is recommended by the Governor's Office for various deficiencies that are occurring in the 2007 fiscal year. And this is another one that has come through. It is a result of a lawsuit that's listed there with the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, and it's being recommended by the Department of Finance to be included in the deficiency bill. My understanding is, as this continues on, there is an accumulation of interest in the amount of a considerable amount each month. So I would want this included in the deficiency bill.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Representative Rukavina.
I was, Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Solberg. I was just wondering what the court is ordering to us to pay for here.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I think it's a lawsuit that has involved an issue that relates to Minnesota citizens' concern for life in their campaigning. And the court has ordered that, in fact, as they won on the campaign, the lawsuit, maybe someone from the campaign finance board would help me out.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members, Jean Olson, Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. We had recently been notified by the Attorney General's office that attorney's fees were being awarded in the case of the MCCL versus Kelly. That was a case that challenged many of Chapter 10A provisions and many 211B provisions. So all the Chapter 10A provisions were upheld, and yet the attorneys get fees, and so they're getting them from the board. All the board's provisions were upheld by the court. So it's $149,600 and then interest at $600 a month.
Thank you. Representative Rukavina?
Madam Chair, maybe one of the attorneys on the committee can help out, but if you won your case, how can we have to pay attorney's fees?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, some of the 211D provisions were overturned as unconstitutional, and as you know, there's no one in the state that has oversight of 211B, such as the board has over 10.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Representative Rukavina, are there any further questions?
Do we have to, Madam Chair, do we have to listen to judges?
Madam Chair, I would renew my motion to adopt
Okay.
A?
What?
A 4?
Okay. Excuse me, Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Silberg, I'm just wondering sufficiency amount for the Board of Judicial Standards.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, I will get to that.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, Representative Clark.
Okay, I was trying to understand what the issue of constitutionality was here, if it was a statutory problem, or did you say there was an issue of constitutional question here?
I think we may be
able to. Representative
Silver? Dean Olson from Campaign Finance Board to answer that question.
Madam Chair and Representative Clark, the issues that were challenged and upheld by the court was 211B, which the definition of campaign material in 211B was defined as unconstitutionally vague and overbroad. 211B04, the disclaimer, was ruled unconstitutional because it was an infringement on anonymous speech. And the remaining one was the limits. There was a provision in 211B08 that prohibited charities from asking candidates for charitable contributions, and that was ruled that it violated the First Amendment right. Those are the three provisions in a multi-case lawsuit that were held by the courts, and they're seeking attorney fees for those portions of the lawsuit.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
I did not answer Representative Paymar's answer correctly. If you'll notice on lines 1.2 and 1.3 of the Amendment A4, when we delete 90,000 and insert 200,000, that's the judicial responsibility increase for the deficiency, judicial board increase. So it's included in this amendment as well. And then I'm sorry for my answer for the first time, too.
Any further questions with Senator Paymar to that point?
Well, I see it now. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
I'm just trying to understand one thing. So if we, does our paying this kind of reaffirm that we think it's okay? I mean, it sounds like the questions were upheld, the law was being upheld, and yet we're paying the losers of the lawsuit. And I guess I'm just wondering, does this create an appearance of supporting?
And Madam Chair, I don't know as if there's any discussion on the merits of it. That's the decision that was made by the court.
Right.
And I'm merely here to say the courts have ruled on something. Yes. They've ruled on the attorney fees, and quite frankly, we have to pay them. Whether or not it's merit is, or not is not my decision. That's the other branch of government.
Right, Madam Chair. And is the court's ruling based on statute, or is it based on the Constitution? I mean, not the court's actual ruling, but the requirement of paying the attorney fees. Is that statutory?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe someone in the fiscal staff or Dean Olson could help on that.
Because we can change laws. I'm trying to understand if this is...
Representative Clark.
That's what I'm trying to understand.
No comment from the fiscal staff?
Madam Chair and Representative Clark, the attorneys...
Ms. Olson.
The fees are only for that portion that they prevailed on. The attorney's fees in total were much larger, but because they prevailed on these issues and they were ruled unconstitutional, therefore the law was unconstitutional.
I see.
Somebody in the state has to wait.
I understand. Thank you. I didn't hear that before.
Madam Chair, I would renew my A4 motion. It includes both of those items that are under discussion, some changes.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
As opposed? Amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, you have another amendment that I think Representative Carlson wishes to do.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, for members in your packet, that's H095882. And Madam Chair, I move the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. All in favor of...
I'd be pleased with it to move that fast. I better explain it first. This deals with Hennepin Corn County, and it's to restore certain bail proceeds that previously had been statutorily earmarked to the municipalities in Hennepin County. During the 2006 legislature, the judicial branch pursued cleanup legislation to remove obsolete references and provisions. This bill was added to an omnibus bill. An incorrect repealer in the omnibus bill led to the unintentional repeal of a 1963 law unique to Hennepin County. The repealed law required Hennepin County District Court to disperse non-felony forfeited bail to the municipality in which the offense occurred. Since July 1, 2006, these bail proceeds have been mistakenly credited to the state general fund. A companion 1963 law, not repealed, requires the municipalities in Hennepin County to pay the Hennepin County Workhouse for the incarceration of misdemeanants. The bail proceeds were intended to help the municipalities pay for these incarceration costs. So the solution then would be to restore and update the repealed 1963 law. And what we're doing here then with this amendment would be to take the $240,000 that would normally have gone to those municipalities from the general fund, and then the county will disperse those funds to the municipalities as a part of that correction. Madam Chair, we do have available Mark S. Thompson from the Judicial District, or the Judicial Administrator for Hennepin County District Court, who is available to maybe quickly comment and answer any questions. And then we have two additional individuals that, if there are additional questions, Ron Weiberg of Hennepin County Department of Community Corrections and Ken Bergstrom. So, Madam Chair, he could quickly comment. Being that this is a... the deficiency bill has not been in the division, so we will take Madam Chair testimony if we may.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson, would you state your name for the record, please?
Mark S. Thompson, Court Administrator, Hennepin County. I want to thank you and Representative Carlson for considering this amendment today. This is a 1963 agreement, really. The workhouse in Hennepin County was originally owned by the city of Minneapolis. I'll give you a little history. In 1963, the county agreed to buy it for about a dollar. One of the provisions was that municipalities around 7 in Hennepin County would pay a per diem for any misdemeanors going into that facility. A quid pro quo and offset for that was that bail in Hennepin, and only Hennepin, not the other 86 counties, would go back when forfeited to the municipalities as a partial offset for that unusual arrangement where the misdemeanors had to be paid for by the municipalities.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Thompson? Representative Anderson, did you have a question to this point?
No. But I do have a question, like for later.
All right. All right. Representative Sigham.
Madam Chair, before we move on to the amendments, I just checked in with the office of the bill, the chair, regarding line 1, line 12, 1.12, the word inadvertence. I assume that's true. I was visited by an individual from Jennifer County this morning and said it was inadvertent. I just needed on the tape to make sure it was inadvertent. If you go back and check that physical note from 2006, that there wasn't some recognition of that in the physical note that showed the physical effect. Inadvertent is true.
Representative Holder.
Madam Chair, Representative Swigum, the information that I've had, indeed, that it was an inadvertent mistake. And what probably one that, if it was inadvertent, should have been corrected in, quite frankly.
Mr. Marks just sure. said that he did not count any revenue.
That's right.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, I believe you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is just technical, but the first amendment that we passed, the A4 amendment, was going into 1.4, says Section 10, Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, and then this one says Section 10, Finance, for the second amendment. Is that, should that be a different section, or is it all pulled into the same section? Or should there be a change?
Thank you. I believe Kathy Novak has something to comment about that.
Madam Chair and members, each amendment is handled independently by the revisor's office, and they also contain instructions that on this amendment are found on line 17 to renumber the sections in sequence. So the amendments are drawn correctly and will be in both.
Thank you for the clarification. Any further questions? If not, would you like to renew your question? Okay. We'll just call the question, and all in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. The amendment is adopted.
Then, Madam Chair, I would recommend that House File 958 be recommended to pass as amended, and we refer to the Committee of Ways and Means. We do have some questions.
Okay. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at a couple of the sections that would really have a lot to do with two particular divisions. One represent PMAR's committee and one representative leaders committee that have some pretty substantial appropriations, and I'm wondering why we wouldn't want the committees just to take a quick look at the bills that have a little more specialty than the overall finance committee. And granted, the chairman both sit on the committee, but is there a pressing time constraint or something that we're not letting the divisions take a look, being that particularly the Met Council appropriation is almost $8 million, and I would think the Transportation Committee would want to look at that to avoid this from happening in the future. But maybe Representative Leader wants to answer. I don't know, but maybe his committee looked at it, and I missed it on the engrossment.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, we did communicate with the division chairs to see if they wanted to take a look at these provisions, and they were, as I understand it, all fine with it being taken up in the full finance committee. And I think that was, if I recall correctly, fine with the chief author, Representative Solberg, as well.
Madam Chair, if I may expand on that a little bit, I met with each of the chairs on this and said, if you want, not refer down, but have a hearing on it or some information on it, they had the opportunity to do that. And I think some of them may have taken that. I think Representative Paymar did on his, except for the amendment that was before us on a couple of those. Then let me just state that why it may be necessary to have this posted a little bit faster. If you look on 2.11 on the board, there's a $200,000 appropriation for transcripts cost for the Board of Public Defense. As I understand it, what we're asking people, because these cases are still going forward in this fiscal year, we're asking the people that are providing the transcripts to work and not be paid. And that is probably not the best policy of the state of Minnesota. I think if they should be paid on a timely basis. So, you know, I suppose you could wait until the very end and pass this, but I don't think that's the type of policy we should have in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Leader, did you have something to this point?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did review that in the Transportation Committee in their budget overview, and they explained it to us.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Paymar?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was under the impression, Representative Carlson, that you were still coming before the Public Safety Finance Committee with the amendment that we just passed here. That's why I didn't say anything about it.
Madam
Representative Carlson.
Chair, Representative Paymar, the amendment that we dealt with a few moments ago dealt with this biennium to get the $240,000 dispersed out of the one-time funds for this biennium. What will be before your committee tomorrow is the question on into the next biennium.
Representative Sigum.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Solberg, just two quick questions. The first is, other than the two amendments that we've added this morning, is this bill exactly as the same as the recommendation of Governor Valenti to the legislature as far as deficiencies are concerned?
Madam Chair, Representative Swigum, in fact, is the first part of the A4 amendment, in fact, is, I think, the amendment I offered, I think it's A4, yes, is the governor's recommendation. The only one that I don't think the governor has commented on is the Carlson amendment.
So the answer is yes. The two amendments that we offered would be added. It's the same as the recommendation.
And Chair Representative Swigum, yes, and there's somebody from the department here, Mr. Gus, who said.
That's okay. Your word is good. Okay. Good with me. The second question, Mr. Solberg, and just to follow on up and enhance a little bit with what Minority Leader Seifert was asking about, Section 9. An $8 million deficiency, an $8 million cost overrun by Metropolitan Council and the Transit Agency. It's a significant deficiency. What do you know about it, Mr. Solberg? Did the Metropolitan Council and the Transit Agency ever have the intent to live within the appropriation we gave them in 2005? Or did they just think that they would just go ahead and spend money they didn't have and come back for a deficiency? Or what's the problem?
Madam Chair, Representative Swigum, as far as I understand it, and the department is here to answer the question if I goof up on it, but my understanding is that the appropriation for this was a percentage of MVEST, and the MVEST funds are down, so that's why there's a deficiency in this year. But that's the Department of Finance comment on if I answered it correctly.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, Brent Gustafson from the Department of Finance. Madam Chair, Representative Swigum, the deficiency recommendations of the governor for the Department of Transportation in Section 8 and the Metropolitan Council in Section 9 are both related to a change in the estimated revenue that is dedicated to those two transit operations from the motor vehicle sales tax. And this is a recognition of the fact that between the February 2006 forecast of MVEST revenues and the November 2006 forecast, that those revenues were down. The Metropolitan Council had at the time already adopted a fiscal year budget that assumed a higher level of revenue, and these appropriations for both Greater Minnesota Transit and Metropolitan Council Transit operations are intended to get to the previously assumed forecast level of revenue.
Madam Chair, I like the explanation. I think it's reasonable. Can you tell me, sir, what the percent of MVEST revenues that's dedicated to transit is?
Mr. Gustafson.
And then tell me what the reduction in the MVEST.
Representative Sigum.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Sigum, I think I may need help on the percentage. The actual forecast decline of MVEST revenues was higher than this last November. This only reflects the portion that's dedicated to transit. The remaining general fund portion prior to the amendment also saw a reduction in that forecast. I don't have that information with me, but I'd be happy to follow up with you.
Well, Madam Chair, that's why I was going to try to get the numbers so I can do some quick math myself to make sure that the reduction was exactly what the percentage was.
Madam Chair, Representative Sigum, I'm informed that 21.5% is the dedicated portion prior to the adoption of last fall's amendment.
So,
Representative Sigum.
So, Madam Chair, sir, that means that the MVEST revenues from last year had to be down somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 plus million.
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, Representative Swigum, that sounds about right.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just glad to see a deficiency bill in here that doesn't come in with $30 to $50 million for corrections, Representative Swigum, like typically is done. But Representative Swigum, I'm perplexed as to why you're questioning this, because this is your policy, Representative Swigum. Representative Swigum, you're not listening, but that's okay. What I'm saying is I'm surprised you're questioning this, because this was the part of the 2001 tax bill where the first rifling of the MVES sales tax occurred, where Greater Minnesota got about $1 million a year, and and Metro Minnesota gets about, can't remember what it is, $200-some million a biennium. You know, I don't know where you people are going to make up this money, because I got my district to overwhelmingly vote against that MVES amendment last election, because I didn't want to steal the rest of that sales tax money on cars. I don't know how you make it up, but you know, this was your doing, Representative Swigum. You and Representative McElroy cleaned this scheme up. So I don't know what you're questioning anybody here for today.
Are there any further questions or discussion?
I want to hear a rebuttal.
Madam Chair, in all fairness, here, he's so far out in Pluto, it's not worth a response.
Madam Chair, you were Speaker when this was done. It was the first theft ever of the actual money got taken out of the sales tax on cars, Representative Swigum. Almost all of it went to the metro area. We took over their local metropolitan transit tax and paid it with state money. You engineered it, and if you didn't, I'm surprised that you didn't know what was going on then, because Representative Abrams and Representative McElroy are the ones that pushed this. I remember them talking about it in committee. And now the other remaining MVES money is gone, because I heard you on the radio supporting it on NPR and the new speaker, and I just want to know where your guys are picking up another $300 million that'll eventually be a biennium to put in the city.
Representative Colbert.
May I make a motion that I move that House File 5958 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee of Ways and Means? We're just about out of time here.
Right. Right. Representative Colbert renews his motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Meeting adjourned.
And meeting adjourned.